Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Thursday morning. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025. We got some tickets to give away to see the Preds take on the Vegas Golden Knights on Tuesday at Bridgestone Arena. It's going to be a big game. Preds and Golden Knights right now fighting for Wild Card 1, Wild Card 2. A trivia question. We're getting ready to talk about Andrew Brunette and Barry Trotz, the job that they've done this year. A trivia question. Hit up our text line. Do not call. Our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Andrew Brunette, as we know, scored the first goal in the history of the Predators franchise. Against which team was that goal? What team were the Predators playing when Andrew Brunette scored the first goal in franchise history? If you know the answer, hit up our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. Our answer, the first person to correctly guess the answer on the text line, Nick Keyser will select as the winner of the two tickets to see the Preds take on the Vegas Golden Knights coming up on Tuesday at Bridgestone Arena. Joe, a big one tonight for the Preds. We'll see how things go. Obviously, things are going really well right now. And it's funny to think back after the Dallas game, the ridiculousness of some of the conversation that we had about Andrew Brunette and people wanting to move on from him 56 games or whatever it was at that point into his coaching tenure. And they've responded very well since then, obviously. So I don't think anybody wants to move on from Andrew Brunette right now. That ridiculousness aside, he's done a very good job. He deserves a lot of credit, I think, for the way this season has gone, the turnaround that we've seen, the streak, all those things. And you mentioned it earlier in the show, Barry Trotz, with some of the moves that he's made, it worked out really well. Ryan O'Reilly's been great for the Predators. Gus Nyquist has been awesome. I mean, you know, obviously, at the deadline, you don't give up a ton to go get Beauvillier and Zucker, and Zucker's starting to fit in specifically really nicely here too. So lots to like about what we've seen from Barry Trotz and Andrew Brunette to this point. And really the question is an overarching question of the franchise, because there's no way to know for sure whether or not they're going to be a duo that leads them to a championship. But the early returns from both of them, like if I'm a Predators fan, I think this year on both fronts, from a talent acquisition, from the building of the roster, obviously to the implementation of the system and the coaching on the ice, you got to be really encouraged by what you've seen in year one from Trotz and Brunette. And it's made me start to wonder, Joe, of like, you know, I thought when they did this and when they made the moves and they went through this offseason of, you know, Barry Trotz was talking about just be patient because it's going to take a while. I thought we were looking at maybe – honestly, 4 or 5 years before they got back into being in contention. And right now, with the way that they're playing, the moves that they've made, the system that they run, all these things, it makes me wonder if they could really speed this thing up. I mean, look, you ask some people, they might go win the cup this year, depending on who you ask. I would be still very surprised by that. But getting into consistent, reliable Stanley Cup contention, I think if you're a Predators fan, you got to feel pretty good about what you've seen to this point as to maybe how that relates to the timeline moving forward.
Yeah, you know, I agree. You know, there's still, to me, there's a couple of key pieces that have to still materialize,
yep.
You know, in relatively short order, I think, you know, for this team to be on paper up there with the best teams in the league. You know, when we talk about this, I would say also let's remember that the last guy, David Poile, is responsible for still like the best players on this team, right?
Yep.
for all of the teeth gnashing in the last few years of his tenure.
Other than Ryan O'Reilly, yes.
That's true. But yeah, that's true. And as you point out, yeah, I mean, the way Gus Nyquist is playing, he's one of the best players on the team this year for sure. But yeah, you know, the stars, Saros, Forsberg, Yossi,
yep.
The guys who were there back when the Preds made these runs. The only guys still, well, actually not the only guys, Colton Sissons too. But let me ask you this. Who were you more impressed with so far? If you had to separate those two guys, Trotz and his decisions or Brunette and his coaching?
I would probably go Brunette, and it's not a shot at Trotz. I just think as a general manager, when you're trying to flip a roster around, I think it takes a couple of years before you can really judge it, right? Like, I still think there's draft picks he's made. that we have no idea what they're going to be yet because of the way the NHL is designed. I mean, it'll probably be a couple more years before we see it. I like what I saw from Trotz in free agency. And look, when he first made the moves, I said it. I mean, I was like, really? 4 years for Ryan O'Reilly? You brought in Gus Nyquist? Okay. I mean, he's been an okay player. 3 years for Luke Shen? I don't know about that one. I mean, so I wasn't. My initial thoughts in free agency were like, yeah, I'm not quite sure what exactly Barry Trotz is doing. Obviously, he knew what he was doing. And specifically, O'Reilly and Nyquist have just been amazing with what they've done this year. So I think Trotz has done a really good job. I look at this team on paper, and I saw some people around the league talking about this the other day, which I think is going to be interesting to see how that relates to Andrew Brunette and the Jack Adams conversation. Like, you still look at the team on paper, especially the forward group, and you say, okay, Forsberg, O'Reilly, Nyquist, I get it. That's a good line. You look beyond that, and on paper, it's not impressive. Like, you look at what they've got, and it's like, really? Michael McCarron, Cole Smith, Kiefer Sherwood, even the second line, like Sissons, Beauvillier, Zucker. It's like, eh, he's not working with a lot with the forward group, especially on paper. And I think the biggest thing about this run that encourages me is I think a lot of it is directly correlated to a full grasp of the system and the system allowing things to really elevate in terms of the way that they're kind of hounding teams right now. So my answer would be Brunette.
Yeah. No, I think that's accurate. And I do think, though, like, it's like in retrospect, you look back at the offseason, it'd probably be fun to play some of what our reactions to some of those veteran signings. Obviously, everybody liked the O'Reilly signing, you know, but yeah, it was kind of like, okay, what is happening here? And it just turned out to be just a really, right now, like a really perfect meshing of veteran presence, serial winners, as Barry Trotz likes to say.
Oh, yes.
And then, you know, some of these guys who are just emerging and just playing great hockey. Are they playing above their head? How many of these guys are playing, like, above their heads right now? Like, you know, is McCarron playing above his head right now? Is Sherwood playing? I mean, probably there's some of that, for sure. There's going to be some regression to the mean there. But this has also been a year that we've seen Jeremy Lausanne become a really good player, right? Like, yep. So there's been some development of individuals too. And just, again, I think it's the magic of coaching when you can not only like the system, which obviously is a fun to watch and effective system, but also to blend all these things together the way he has and to, you know, come through that. I mean, the 9-2 loss to Dallas wasn't just like the ugliest game of this season. We were talking about, is that the ugliest game we've ever seen the Nashville Predators play? You know?
I think it was, yeah.
And end up bounce back from that. I mean, that's where I'd give him the edge to.
Yeah, and like if you're a fan watching all this happen, I still think you go back to not only the prospect pool that you have, and you're hoping that some of these guys come up and provide maybe a higher level than some of the players that you've got on your roster right now eventually. And it starts to, I mean, your mind starts to wander to, if you get that, what's that going to mean in terms of the bottom line with the system already being as effective as it is? Now, look, people, it's a copycat league, and Andrew Brunette talks about it all the time. I mean, they run a different system that not a lot of teams run. So, I mean, teams are going to hone in on that, and they're going to try to do everything they can to slow it down. But I really like the way that they play. I still come back to one thing, and you brought it up, though. Like, to me, playoff time, you know, when you're trying to be a consistent, persistent Stanley Cup contender, down the middle. Like, who's that guy down the middle that can be a superstar player? Like, Ryan O'Reilly right now, I think, is a really, really, really good player. I don't know that he is a superstar-level player as, like, a number one center. He's not Nathan MacKinnon. Nobody's Nathan MacKinnon. MacKinnon and McDavid are kind of on their own tier as it relates to stars in this league right now. But, like, finding a guy that can match up consistently, that's young, that you can build around, is something that's eluded them for a long time. And I still think, as good as I feel about Brunette and as good as I feel about some of the players they've got in their system and Barry Trotz and the job he's done to this point, like, finding that guy, I think, is really what ultimately takes them over the top, and that's still left to be determined.
Yeah, and it's no lock. You know, Lee says, going forward, Preds still need a top-end forward. Not going to be able to draft high. He's talking about an offer sheet, Dawson Mercer, you know, the someone wanting to force a way of a team like Tkachuk did. But really set up well with draft capital, seven of the top 100 this year in cap space. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Can they get to the top of a draft? You know, you've said it, like, this year's draft is not last year's draft. Can they go find the young, you know, young or youngish star who kind of changes, you know, kind of changes the trajectory? I mean, it's just easier said than done. There's no guarantee. And, you know, there's plenty of teams that want guys like that, and there aren't a lot of them.
Nick Kieser, do we have a winner on the tickets for the Las Vegas? I just said the Las Vegas. The Vegas Golden Knights.
Well,
they're not Las Vegas.
Las Vegas is where they play, but that yes. Yeah. Yeah, Chris Brady, you are our winner. I've already touched base with him, so congratulations and enjoy that game against the Las Vegas Golden Knights.
Yes, we just totally made up a team. Correctly identifying the Carolina Hurricanes as the team that Danger Brunette scored the first goal in franchise history against. So Carolina. Had a lot of people guessing the Panthers because they thought I was pulling a fast one with the Panthers game tonight, and they did play the Panthers in their first game. They did not score in their first game. So Carolina.
That's a tricky one.
It is.
That's a tricky one.
It is. 615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your thoughts on the Predators coming up next. Andrew Brunette, Barry Trotz, your confidence level based off what you've seen from both of them in year one moving forward here. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Nick Kieser here with you on this Thursday morning, taking your thoughts on the Preds, Andrew Brunette, Barry Trotz, your impressions of the job they've done, what that means for the Predators as they try to build forward here. Jim on Twitter says, team definitely adjusted to Brunette's system. It takes time, as we saw with Maurice and the Panthers. Josi Forsberg-Saros found their game. Health is important, but now guys understand what he wants. Trotz made tough decisions for the future, brought in character guys. It's paid off. This is from Jim on Twitter talking about that. Ethan from Lawrenceburg with a question says, should we be concerned about younger player development with no one playing well other than Evangelista? What do you think of that, Joe?
Yeah, well, we've talked about that. He is really coming on. I mean, if you really look at Evangelista's trajectory, I mean, you know, like, he was making big-time noise in Milwaukee last year, and he's been pretty much – I mean, I feel good about him being a good forward for this team for a while. And obviously you have guys out there like, you know, Tomasino and Parsonen and some of these guys that at this point, it's early, but, you know, the different trajectory, right? More ups and downs. Cody Glass – you know, as well, a little bit different situation, and they traded for him. But, you know, Kemmel, is he a guy who's going to be like the next kind of like Evangelista, Joachim Kemmel, you know, and be on that trajectory and kind of get here when he gets here and stick, you know?
Yeah.
How good is Matthew Wood going to be someday? I mean, they have possibilities. So, I mean, you're right. You would rather have more of these guys in some of these spots. But look, when you have guys like Jankowski and some of these guys right now who are playing really well, I mean, that's also part of the story that they are playing really well together, really well individually.
Well, and, you know, you sign Novak to the extension. And again, Novak's not a young guy. I think sometimes he gets lumped
he's
into
mid.
It. He's mid. And he's playing really well right now, too. Like, he Jankowski, Evangelista, I know they moved some things around the other day, and Zucker was kind of moving up and down, but those three are playing really well together. Evangelista, you know, it was interesting to get Derek McKenzie's perspective on him because it feels like he is, I don't want to say totally figured it out because I think there's still more to get to from him. I mean, I've said it before. I think when he's on and if he projects the way I think he can, I think he can be, you know, a 60, 70-point guy in this league at some point. I really do. So,
which would be huge.
He's still a ways away from that. But I do think the way he's playing, the confidence that he has, is really encouraging. You would love to see them make this run. I think where you'd feel great moving forward instead of just probably really good where you feel right now. Like, you'd feel great moving forward if they were going through this run and it was Evangelista and it was Parsonen and it was Tomasino. And it was Glass, and it was all these guys that were not only playing but contributing while you were doing it. And that's not the case. Like, it's basically Evangelista. I know Cody Glass is – he has contributed throughout the stretch. He's been a healthy scratch since the trade deadline. So it's been a little bit of time here now without him being in the lineup. But we talked about this the other day. Evangelista is basically the one young guy at forward they have right now. You know, you got Del Geizo back on D. You got Stasny on D who's hurt right now. But Evangelista kind of basically the one young guy at forward. So that is, I think, to Ethan's point, the one part of this where you look at, where you project forward and you say, all right, well, next year you've got some of your veterans that are going to be a year older. At some point, some of these younger guys are going to start to come up and infiltrate the lineup. What's that going to look like once they do? Like, are they going to continue like a linear path forward? Are there going to be some bumps in the road when guys like Kimmel? And look, I'm not giving up on Parson and Tomasino. They're probably going to be back in the lineup here at some point moving forward here, at least one of them. So is that going to be a hindrance next year? Do you take a step back? Like, it's interesting to think about where their roster is right now because it's a pretty veteran-laden group with the lineup they currently have.
Yeah, that's a great question. And so, you know, are guys going to be ready or do you fill in the gaps other ways, things like that? So, I mean, it's a fair thing to bring up. Again, I'm with you on Evangelista. Like, I kind of thought, you know, it's so early. It's always, I think, a mistake, and I do it a lot, of like seeing someone real early in the league and thinking you know where it's going. Sometimes you're right on that. Sometimes you aren't. But I was like, maybe he'll be production-wise like a Craig Smith. You know, like not the same game, but production wise. Yeah. But I think the ceiling is absolutely higher than that with him. So it's great to have that storyline. You know, it's great to have a guy like that playing the way he is. They do need more. There's no doubt. And as we've talked about, they need some names that we don't know right now.
And then, you know, in the meantime, we talked about Brunette, the system and the buy-in and all those things. Barry Trotz has put together kind of a veteran-laden group here. And, you know, quietly, you look at it, Joe, it's a group that has an absolute ton of playoff experience. That to me is what, like, if they get in here, beyond just the obvious of the way that they're playing, like, McDonough has played just about as many playoff games as anybody in the league. Ryan O'Reilly's got a ton of playoff experience. I mean, look, Yossi and Forsberg have a ton of playoff experience. Nyquist has a ton of playoff experience. I mean, there's a lot that they've got in terms of playoff minutes logged. I mean, Luke Shen won some cups in Tampa. Yeah, I mean, the list goes on and on of like playoff experience that they have. Now, they don't really have it in goal. Like, Juuse Saros does not really have that much playoff experience. I mean, he didn't play against Colorado. I thought he was really good against Carolina. He played in the bubble series against Arizona. That's it. That's all he's got in terms of a starter.
That's a good point. Yeah, actually, he does have a pretty limited track record. But yeah, the Carolina series, he was fantastic. And that's where, you know, they get in the playoffs, as we all think they will. I mean, at this point, it looks awfully good. And this is where it would be great if some of these young guys were in the lineup, right? Because that's just valuable experience. And a lot of those guys just aren't going to have that experience this year. And I'm not saying they should. They shouldn't. You're going with your best team. But that's where it would be great if, you know, one or two more of those guys, I don't know, like Glass getting back in the lineup or whatever. I mean, I wouldn't mess with anything right now. I'm just saying, for the benefit of the young guys to have that experience, it's going to be great for Evangelista to go through that.
Ben says, do y'all see anyone on the roster being a top 10 NHL player one day? Could be vital to help with cup contention. I mean, probably not. I mean, top 10.
That's lofty.
They certainly don't. There's not a prospect, in my opinion, that they have right now that projects to be a top 10 player in the NHL. I mean, that's a heck of a place to be. Like, I was watching some Tanner Molendijk tape last night. I mean, the kid's good. So, I mean, I really like how he projects. You know, Yossi right now, the way he's playing, is close to a top 10 player, but that's not really what you're asking about. So, no, the answer is no. And that's what you got to hope to find at some point, is a guy that could be that.
Yeah. Now, look, I was actually going to bring up Yossi. I mean, early at this, you know, early on as a second round pick, did people think he was going to become like a perennial Norris contender, you know, at some point? No. I mean, when Arvidsson was picked in the fourth round, did people think he was going to set the franchise record for goals in a season, be a multi-year 30-goal guy? No. So, It's not like it's impossible, but yeah, it would be hard to identify that. They don't have that top of the draft centerman that you're just like, oh yeah, this guy has everything you need, and they're still looking for that guy.
Coming up next, the madness begins today. The NCAA tournament underway today. Joe Rexroad's favorite day of the entire year. We'll get more into that coming up next. Take your thoughts as well on the matchups you're excited to see today. Of course, also involving the Tennessee Vols tonight as their tournament play gets underway against St. Peter's. More coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Tune in to 102.5, 106.3, The Game this week for NCAA tournament coverage brought to you by Toyota. Ready, set, go. Get your Toyota today at toyota.com. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Nick Kieser here with you on this Thursday morning. We are live from our Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. Joe Rexroad, live from Charlotte, North Carolina, as the NCAA tournament gets underway today. Joe, I'm scrolling through Twitter right now, and I'm seeing Sports Illustrated articles about Tom Izzo wanting to destroy the NCAA tournament. What'd you do to him yesterday? It's really, really a kind of a character assassination by you.
Good God. Well, see, the thing is, it's actually, I mean, the thing I did was ask the question. I think it was actually David Hale from ESPN. He tweeted the quote as he was talking about it, and people really went off on that one. And then David Hale and my buddy Graham Couch had a Twitter war all last night about it. So I think he misunderstood a little bit. But look, Izzo was confusing with it. But I just asked him. I asked him about just what Sankey is talking about. And I really did think, I mean, I guess I shouldn't have expected Izzo to be like, hey, Greg Sankey, show up here anytime. I'll put on the boxing gloves. But, you know, but I thought maybe he'd dunk on him a little bit more. Like Rick Barnes yesterday was like, he's like, I'm not for a tournament expansion. I don't want it. Thank you. That's all I had to say.
Yeah.
Izzo, I think the thing about Izzo is I think he actually is for expansion. A lot of coaches are. And, you know, the idea being that, you know, D1 has inflated so much that you need a little bit more opportunities. And these coaches all get judged their jobs on making the tournament, et cetera, et cetera. I disagree with them, but I get that. But people took it as Izzo was basically agreeing with Sankey on more Power Five instead of, you know, the one bid leagues. And that's where I got Izzo on the phone later. It's like, no, that's not what I meant. I'm like, okay, just so you know, Twitter's going off on you right now. Like, you are the devil on Twitter. And of course, Izzo hates Twitter and all that stuff. So he had some words that I can't repeat here.
Yes.
But I think everything's fine.
I'm sure he did.
Until he loses today, and then Spartan Twitter goes nuts.
So I'm going to ask you a question now that has a chance for you to end up on Freezing Cold Takes tomorrow, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the highest, 1 being the lowest, your score of how much Tennessee should be on upset alert tonight against St. Peter's on a scale from 1 to 10.
I mean, I'll give it a 2 just because it's the tournament, and I mean – crazier things have happened in this tournament than St. Peter's beating Tennessee tonight. I mean, Fairleigh Dickinson beating Purdue last year remains one of the most mind-boggling things I've ever seen in sports. Like UMBC beating Virginia. Virginia consistently is so bad offensively that's exactly the program you might expect would have a problem like that. And we know Tennessee, shooting-wise lately, has not been good. But I mean, it's hard for me to get there, man. It's really hard for me to get there. I think they're going to win by 25. I really do. And I know, you know, some Vols fans probably hate that, but it's just the reality of the matchup. They're going to get wide open shots, and they have no matchup issues defensively, you know? So I don't see it at all. I think it's going to be, because the thing is, every year in this tournament, we always remember Fairleigh Dickinson, right?
Yep.
But every year in this tournament, at the 1 and 2 line of those 8 games, I mean, what, 6 at least are blowouts, right?
For the most part.
You know, and there's some that are close. The longer St. Peter's can hang around, then obviously then you start wondering about tightening up, and this building will go absolutely nuts. You know, everybody in that building will be absolutely riding for St. Peter's, other than the Vols fans, and there will be a lot of them, but I'm going to go 2, and that is just because of the tournament. Otherwise, it would be one or zero.
I'll go one, and we both got a chance to just be really in one tomorrow if Tennessee loses this one coming up. But I'm with you. Like, the matchup, I do tend to lean more toward maybe the Mississippi State thing being a wake-up call, good for them heading into this. I am leaving a little room in the back of my mind of what if they just mentally crumble on the moment. If that happens, though, I don't think it's going to happen today. I just think there's too much of a talent advantage today for them to – I mean, I think they could pass the ball to Dalton Connect. He could drive their way out of trouble today if they really get down to it. So I'll go one. I will say, though, I'm already starting to look ahead, and maybe I shouldn't because of the way the Colorado State played the other night, maybe they'll take care of Texas today. And I am already starting to look ahead to the Tennessee-Texas storyline of Rick Barnes and just what poetic stuff that would be if Texas takes out Tennessee in this tournament. Vol Twitter go nuts with that one. I'm already looking ahead to Saturday.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, look, Saturday is going to be – Saturday, absolutely. It's where you start. You can lose. And, I mean, Texas is very talented. I mean, Dylan Dessou, people in Nashville remember him. So, they've got – plenty of talent, and I like Colorado State a lot. I think Colorado State's going to beat Texas today, but we'll see. It probably would be better for Barnes, just because then tomorrow all anybody's going to be talking about is Texas and Barnes, you know. And that's just one of those things that gets into. It's a side distraction in a game that you probably don't want. They'd probably rather have Colorado State win that game, but certainly Saturday. You got a team now that can beat you, and you got to play well. And that's why today, I mean, I think it's an opportunity St. Peter's going to give them. I think they're going to zone the heck out of them, and it's just an opportunity. Get those guys hitting some shots, man. I mean, play basketball, you know. Gainey, James, Vescovy, you know, they need at least one of them, preferably two of them, to get it going a little bit. Because everything else for this team should be fine.
Let's go to our 1025 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Adam in Portland. Adam, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, boys. Hey, I got a question. St. Peter's, historically, like, a pretty decent tournament team. Total success?
Well, a couple years ago, for sure.
Well, they had one run ever, but it was 2 years ago, and they one of the incredible runs ever. I mean, beating Kentucky, Western Kentucky, which was a very good Western Kentucky team, and then beating Purdue in the Sweet 16. I mean, but other than, yeah, I don't even know, you know, if they've been in the tournament before that, but that run 2 years ago. And the thing is, I think that actually maybe kind of hurts them because people think about that, and this is a totally different team, different coach and everything.
Well, what I was thinking about, Joe, is like, I mean, that may be a psyche thing, though, because Tennessee, like, they've come in as heavy favorites the last few times they've gotten in, right? And they just can't get past the wall. Like, that's a problem. Like, we all expect them to win in a blowout, but Dalton Connect's going to have to hit shots. Guys around him are going to have to hit shots. And I've never seen a team go as ice cold as Tennessee won that SEC tournament. That's what scares me, is they have the ability to put up, like, 40 points in a game, which is wild. So, I don't know, dude. Like, I don't think you – 1-2, I don't think you guys are giving it enough respect just because it's – you know, the recent history says that it could be a game.
Yep, thanks for the call, Adam. I will say, though, on the offensive front, that's what made the Mississippi State game so weird, Joe, is offensively, like, they really haven't had one of those. Like, that was really bad. I mean, they've had some poorer shooting games. They hadn't had one like that where just nothing went well for them like it did against Mississippi State.
Yeah, well, and, like, I mean, Vescovy – I mean, a couple of them were right in front of me, so I'm like seeing the line of the shot. I'm like, yep, that's in. I mean, it was perfect. It was online. He was in rhythm, and it really went halfway down and popped out. Two of those happened to him, and it's just like, this dude can't buy a break. And they had a few like that. He wasn't the only one. Terrible day, and that's beyond like sort of just some of the. I think it affected their defense. And so now all of a sudden Mississippi State's getting backdoor dunks and just driving them to the cup, all these things. And it's like, this is not Tennessee defense. I think Tennessee's defense suffered. And they said so after the game, from Tennessee shooting. Cannot let that happen. Play your aggressive defense. Do what you do on that end. Try to get runouts. Try to pound it in. Try to get to the rim, get to the line. And then you're not as reliant on the outside shot, you know. But I think the outside shots in that game were so bad for them that it did. It affected everything. And Mississippi State gets credit. They're good. They're athletic. They're long, and they played great. But, yeah, they just need to at least play the defense that they've played almost all year. And that gives them a chance in most games in this tournament anyway, even if they're not having a good offensive day.
Let's go back to our 102.5 The Game phone line. Welcome in Matthew. Matthew, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Enjoy the show.
Thank you.
Out of the SEC teams that are in the tournament, who do you feel will go the furthest? And, by the way, War Eagle.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it. Well, Joe, you can start on that one. I think you got Kentucky in your Final Four. Is that probably your answer? But maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. Now, look, if I didn't see the bracket and I was just picking, I'd pick Auburn. I absolutely love Auburn, and I agonize. I'm about to tell you guys all about my bracket next segment. Don't worry.
I look forward to it.
But I agonized over Auburn, UConn, and the Sweet 16 because I think – seriously, I said it earlier this week. That is the game I most want to see in this tournament, Auburn, UConn, Sweet 16. And they got a real chance to win it. But just with the draw, I went with Kentucky. And the thing is, I went with Kentucky, and I swear they might lose today to Oakland. They might.
Well, I went Florida. Really, I had Florida in the Final Four, but – you know,
I don't hate that.
If I'm just picking SEC teams, like Tennessee's the one, right? I mean, they're the best one. They're the best team. They're the deepest team. They've had the best year. Like, Tennessee's the team. I just think there's a lot of tournament stuff that people can't get past. Hey, look, I've got them going to the Elite Eight against Purdue. So, I mean, it's a pretty good run. But I think Tennessee is the team.
Yeah, I do too. And if we get that game, Tennessee Purdue, it's going to be an absolute battle, no doubt about it. And they can win that game. I've just been on the Purdue train all year, and I'm not getting off it. You know, and I think that draw. I mean, they could have a better draw. I mean, the better draw for them would be the South, at least a better draw at the Elite Eight level. You know, would be the South, or it would be the one out West, but. No, Tennessee is absolutely capable of playing in Arizona in a couple weeks.
Coming next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning here on the program. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will join us at 8 o'clock. All that coming up, Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
The first four sucks. I don't care to see all these games with 16 seeds playing each other. And I hate this demand that we pretend like this is real NCAA tournament basketball.
The sun's shining on me. It's shining on me, man.
It is that time of the day on Joe Rexroad's favorite day of the year. It's almost difficult for me to imagine him mustering up a rant topic today just with how happy he is, but he's going to try to do it anyway. Joe Rexroad, the floor is yours. This is an extended
Thank view. You. Sorry, I muted myself. Maybe that's a little sign of
dramatic pause.
Maybe that's a little sign of what I should do with this rant, but whatever, I'm going to press forward. I don't know who needs to hear this, but I'm going to read my whole bracket to you now. Right now, I'm going to read that to you. Do you know why? Because during this week, people talk about their brackets. I've had tons of people ask me about my bracket. It's what America does this week. America fills out brackets and talks about the brackets. It's why ESPN not only did a two-hour show after the brackets were announced, then came back the next night with Jay Billis for an hour just on his own bracket. It's why The Athletic had all of us write our picks immediately, why we're doing a bracket challenge at 102.5 The Game website. And by the way, I hope you guys got your picks in. I got mine in.
Yep.
And all of our picks are in a special section so people can see them. You see? Because that's what we do this week. We fill out and we talk about our brackets. Okay, so let's see. UConn over Stetson. I got Northwestern over Florida Atlantic. San Diego State over UAB. Auburn over Yale. BYU over Duquesne. Illinois-Morehead State. Drake over Washington State. Iowa State over South Dakota. North Carolina over Wagner. Mississippi State over Michigan State. St. Mary's over Grand Canyon. Charleston over Alabama. Bama, Bama, Bama. New Mexico over Clemson, Baylor over Colgate, Nevada over Dayton, Arizona.
Wait a minute, you didn't pick Sparty?
Oh, no.
What's going on here?
Well, they're going to get their butts kicked by Mississippi State. Sorry to say, Izzo. I didn't tell him that in a pre-show meeting. I didn't want him to get too upset. Tennessee over St. Peter's. I got Colorado State over Texas, Creighton over Akron, South Carolina over Oregon, Samford over Kansas, McNeese over Gonzaga, which means McNeese Samford in the second round. I got Utah State over TCU, Purdue over Grambling, Marquette over Western Kentucky, Florida over Colorado, Kentucky over Oakland, but boy, look at that one though. Texas Tech over NC State, Duke over Vermont, James Madison over Wisconsin, Nebraska over Texas A&M, and Houston over Longwood. I'll go ahead and fast forward to the final four of Purdue, UConn, Kentucky, Arizona, and I got Purdue beating UConn in the championship game. So there you go. Now, if you're someone who's confusing talking about your bracket with, like, I don't know, people talking about their fantasy football team, now that is worth complaining about. Now, too much fantasy football team talks a little bit, but it's not a shared experience all in the same week that we all are looking at the same sheet. So if you're confusing those two things, you are just confused. I mean, talking about your bracket. What do you mean?
Never mind. Continue.
Like, holy sheet?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Your sheet, your bracket sheet. Not talking about your bracket this week is like saying, like, Super Bowl VIII. Let's not talk about the Super Bowl. Let's not preview that game or predict it or anything. Let's just talk about the NBA regular season. I mean, I'd rather hear people on the radio talk about their brackets than stupid conspiracy theories or exaggerating whining about things that don't deserve to be whined about, or self-importance and telling everybody how important they are.
Right.
That's just me.
I'm so upset with you that you're going against our executive producer, Tom Izzo.
Oh yeah, I've been saying that all week, man. I know. No, they're gonna. Yeah, it's just a bad matchup for them. It's just a really bad matchup.
I have Mississippi State winning too, by the way, and beating North Carolina in the next round. So,
ooh,
what do you think about
okay.
that?
Okay, I think I'm glad that you're talking about your bracket. Mm-hmm. I'm interested. Tell me more. Very interested.
Well, I've got Florida in the Final Four. I've got Baylor in the Final Four, and then Purdue and you. We have the same championship game and the same result, but I have two lower seeds in the Final Four. I mean, Baylor's a three, so it's not really a lower seed. But Florida, I've got in the Final Four.
I tell you what, I love the Florida pick, and I looked at them because they would match up potentially against Kentucky, and I could absolutely see them beating Kentucky too. And you know, Cal Tucker made the point last weekend. You know, Kevin Ware, anybody remembers Louisville back in 2013? Awful, awful injury, and I remember at the time it was like, man, how is this team going to, like, keep playing, right? And they go on and win it all. And I can see Florida, terrible, Micah Hanglockton, terrible injury for him in the title game. You know, I could see this being a similar kind of story. They are very good. They still have tons of size inside, big, you know, good guards, Will Richard, former Belmont Bruin, and yeah, I like that pick a lot. I'm kind of jealous of that pick, actually.
So you think the Will Wade show continues on today, huh? McNeese with the upset.
I do. I do. I have got
that guy. Something else, man.
He's amazing. I mean, the quote in that story where he's like, "Yeah, you want to write a hit piece on me? Go ahead. I don't care." And he's
ain't
like,
afraid of your wire.
But the thing is, it's like, I mean, I find a lot of what he said refreshing. He's like, If my guys can get like six figures and go to an SEC school, awesome, go. You know, whereas, I mean, obviously it's tough for a mid-major coach today. Very tough. But, you know, it's, hey, man, it's in this era. And the thing is, you know, you look at what he's done as a coach. And, yes, obviously talent acquisition, huge part of it. But he's a good coach. He's going to be somewhere in a couple years and probably win a lot. And no one's going to care about any of that stuff in the past anymore.
Vanderbilt should hire him. They absolutely should hire him. And I don't know if he would even take the job, but I would. I mean, look, I get it. There's a lot of icky stuff that went down with him. But, I mean, in today's landscape of college sports and the way that these things change, Vanderbilt should hire Will Wade.
Yeah, there's no way, especially because the show. I mean, they would never hire someone that still has a year of show cause. But yeah, I mean, like,
he is going to end up somewhere and win at a high level. Yeah. It's going to happen.
Yeah. No, I agree. Zach Nashville says Illinois Purdue wins because it's the closest college to Puka Nacua. Nice.
Thank you.
the Puka Nacua Boilermakers.
615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll be joined by our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. We'll get his thoughts on all things NFL and his thoughts on the treachery of Joe Rexroad going against Tom Izzo as well. I'm sure he'll enjoy that. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, The Game.